Talk Shoe. Recorded live.
Hello, everybody. This is Rick, and it's the 11th of August, 2014, and you're listening to the EMSO, EMSW, and AR Library call. We've got several questions today, so let's get to those. First question. Just lost the first question, excuse me. My husband has had more than one affair during our marriage. Our D-Day was January 17th. He's allowed me to throw out some of the gifts that the last AP gave him. However, there are some things he still kept. What do you recommend regarding the souvenirs from the affair? How about holding onto things like a blanket they used to have sex in his office? My personal opinion on this sort of thing is it's far better to get rid of those things. It's just part of closing the door and throwing away the key. The last thing somebody needs is to have triggers that may remind them of the affair partner, but even worse, it also creates triggers for the hurt spouse. And I believe being able, out of kindness, just to eliminate those is important. I know it may be perfectly good stuff, but I found in the past that's really helpful. I remember one guy calling me in particular who said, "You won't believe what I'm doing right now. I'm throwing out at Goodwill a $500 belt buckle. I've had people sell houses because of this. I've had people sell cars because of this, give away tons of gifts, watches. Even in my own case, I remember getting rid of a quilt that my grandmother made because it ended up being a huge trigger. So just in my personal opinion, get rid of the stuff. It'll help with recovery in the long run. Second question. Wondering if I will ever recover and heal. Rick, I'm wondering if I'll ever recover and heal from my husband's betrayal. It will be 2 years in October that I found out he was having an affair. Soon after discovery, my husband has turned into a different man and took full responsibility for his actions. Sorry for what he did, always apologizing, takes me out for dinner instead of expecting me to cook for him, helps around the house, buys me nice things, and overall treats me very well. I insisted on seeing a marriage counselor, which he was not thrilled about, but agreed to it, and we have been going for over a year now. Also, about 1 month ago, I finished Harboring Hope. I can honestly say that my marriage has never been better, except for the fact I feel that I'm never going to recover from his infidelity. He's asked me more than once what else he could possibly do, and I have no answer for him except I wish he could turn back the clock and choose not to have the affair, and he tells me that if he could do that, he would, but he can't. I can certainly say that my recovery is in a better place now than it was a year ago, but I'm still angry and upset over what he did. I think about it daily, and I feel like it's going to bother me for the rest of my life. There are times that I think that if I just left the marriage, I could get on with my life and I wouldn't have to face him every day, and it would make getting over this easier for me. He keeps telling me how wonderful my life is now, and it's going to stay that way, and to stop thinking about the past. How do I put that part of my life to rest and accept what's happened and move forward? I'm not sure as I answer this, but one other thing you might try, if you have not done it yet, would be the EMS Online or the EMS Weekend, because sometimes that helps couples deal with maybe a final piece that has yet to be dealt with in terms of empathy. I would hope that the marriage counseling is addressing some of that, and if it is, that's helpful. Part of this recovery is about you making a decision to move on and a decision to let it go. Cindy Bell, one thing she says that I think is really good is that you have to make that decision, or start asking yourself the question, why do I want to know? What's the purpose? How's it going to help me? How's it going to help me move forward? And then you have to begin to fight the battle of how do I stop focusing on this? How do I stop thinking about this? What am I going to do instead of thinking about it? Part of that really is a personal decision. And that's, I know that's not fair by any means, but I don't know that any amount of, if there's anything he can do in the long run to make that completely go away until you make that decision that that's something you ultimately want, which, and I'm not saying that you haven't done that. I don't know you. I don't know what's going on. But, again, asking yourself the question each time, why do I want to know and how's it going to help me? Often, and not meaning to create a problem here, but often the reason we don't want to let go is pride, and sometimes it's just fear. If it's pride-based, then it's we get angry largely because it's wounded us in a sense of we didn't deserve it, it wasn't fair, and that's a hard thing to ultimately let go. Sometimes doing things like Al-Anon, where you learn to focus maybe on yourself, can help. Again, this isn't a fair situation, and I hate that it's happened to you. But you also have to choose to get better. There's a condition created. Siegel and Siegel talk about it, which is I just lost the term. But what it basically says is there's some people that are afraid to let go and move forward simply because they're afraid what was a major wound will only look like a paper cut. And so they become a living memorial to that circumstance or what's occurred. Oftentimes, sexual abuse victims will do this. It's unconscious, but they're afraid to ever let it go, and it keeps them trapped forever in the pain. Hopefully, that's not your situation. But if it is, it's still a matter of choosing ultimately on your own, not because your husband tells you to. In fact, him suggesting that you get over it probably is going to make things worse and not better, so I hope he'll stop that. Another piece that sometimes keeps someone trapped is post-traumatic stress disorder. I don't know if you've considered that or if that's been an issue. In that sort of situation, until the story makes sense, it's difficult to begin to let it go. And so if you still have questions as to what happened and why it happened, sometimes that will keep a person stuck. Finally, in the prefrontal cortex, one of the things that happens when somebody is stressed is that we get serotonin levels drop, which the singular gyra gets lit up, and that's the gear shifter. And so we become very compulsive as a result of what's occurred. Probably the best intervention for that type of situation is something like an SSRI, serotonin reuptake inhibitor, maybe something like SAMe. But some of those are like SAMe and St. John's wort, of course, are homeopathic. You can buy those, a serotonin reuptake inhibitor like Lexapro, Prozac, Zoloft, Paxil. Those are things that you have to see a doctor for. And usually before someone gives up and gets a divorce, especially if they feel stuck and they can't quit thinking about it, sometimes that is a sign of low serotonin levels, and considering a different type of intervention can be useful. So hopefully that gives you some ideas. I do wish you well. Again, consider if it's something you feel really stuck on, maybe addressing it even from a medical perspective, because some of that really can be physiological. And I do wish you well as you continue trying to heal from that. Buried for Life conference calls. My husband and I attended a recent EMS weekend, but at the conclusion of it, he decided to continue with his affair. We participated together in the first EMS conference call, but he declined to do any of the following ones. I've continued participating alone as the topics, as the topics were clearly helpful to my healing. We are about to begin the Married for Life section, and I'm debating how helpful this will be to me on my own. I'm hoping for reconciliation in our marriage despite the current situation, and know that God can perform mighty miracles. My question for you is if it even makes sense or would be helpful to continue by myself at this point. I really think, you know, much of this is couples oriented, but at the same time, if this is something, if you have a really good connection with your group, just for the sake of support, I would say absolutely continue with the calls. I think you'll find the support is more than worth the effort, and you'll be learning from things on the call, and I'm sure the other people would be very appreciative of just your willingness to work through this. Another suggestion, if you're there by yourself, you might even want to consider volunteering to be the full-time facilitator, or at least a part-time facilitator. That way, the couples can all participate, and you've got a role to play in the group if you feel like facilitation is something you could do well. But if it's a place of support, then yes, I'd recommend it. If you don't really feel close to the couples in that group, I don't know that you would be getting that much support. And at that point, I think it might be awkward. So I know that's not a yes or no question, but hopefully that gives you some ideas of how you could take advantage of that and maybe could help you in your own journey in terms of figuring out as you learn things, maybe learning things to even speak to your mate about. I need help overcoming my sexual addiction. Hi, Rick. I need help. I'm the unfaithful spouse and attended the EMS weekend with my wife about 10 months ago. Since that time, I've been on a journey of healing from my sexual addiction. In the past, I've engaged in porn, masturbation, emotional affairs with women, fantasy, not just sexual, but also relational. This would take the form of evaluating women for attractiveness, then projecting on them my perceptions of their personality, what they would be like as a wife, etc. This started at a very early age and has been insidious throughout my life. These thoughts can be almost instantaneous in my mind. I'm trying to be a new man. I want to be a new man. Prior to attending EMS, I attended sex addiction recovery groups for 4 years. Since EMS, working with my wife, I put boundaries in my life to protect me and make me safe for me and for my spouse. I've been trying to bounce my eyes and avoid interactions with women at work. I've tried to be distant, courteous, but not engaging emotionally with them, and I've worked to avoid situations that I know are risky for me, but I still continue to cross these and other boundaries. To either say too much to a woman at work, making people laugh while conducting training, or dwelling on how attractive a woman is in a movie I'm watching with my wife, even though it's a non-sexual period piece where only women's faces and hands are showing. I feel like no matter what, how many boundaries I put up, I keep crossing that no matter how many boundaries I put up, excuse me. It's not killing the root of the disease, And I kept having to drag my wonderful wife through it all, hurting her again and again. How can I be free of the disease? I need God to transform me, and I've been asking Him to change me, but I feel like I'm missing something. So if you want to go deeper to the root, I don't know if you've done any individual counseling around this with somebody who specializes in sexual addiction. Certainly that would be one suggestion I would make. More than that, there's a book called Surfing for God. And I'm trying to think real quick who wrote that book. Let me see if I can find it here. And the thing I like about that particular book, it's by John Cusack. Surfing for God, Michael John Cusack, Cusick. In that book, he talks more about the root issues and where this comes from. In the long run, too, I don't know if you remember this from EMS, but it's not as much about looking or not looking. It's really more about even learning how to look. And you might, there's a gentleman named Christopher West, and you might Google him. He's got something I feel like is really good called Winning the Battle for Sexual Purity. And also, I think some of his teaching is useful. But if you look at John Cusack and Surfing for God, as well as Christopher West material, I think you can get some ideas. But like I said, if you can learn how to look at women and shift what you're really trying to do, and I'm not giving you permission to go look at porn or anything like that, but I do know that part of the problem is we go about it the wrong way. We keep making it almost a legalistic venture where it's about performance, when in reality it's really about love and learning how to love people at a deeper level. So I hope that'll give you an idea. But again, I would totally change the approach. I still believe at times that 12-step work is really important, largely because it also keeps the focus on, if it's a spiritual focus, it's also causing you to look differently, where it becomes about loving others instead of using others. And if you know that was something that was helpful, learning how to, as the 11th step says, praying only for the knowledge of His will in my life and to carry that out, to me, it really gets to be about abiding in the vine and learning spiritually how to conduct yourself differently in terms of also how you look at people. I hope that gives you a few suggestions maybe of how you can move forward. And our last question for the day, safety during recovery. Dear Rick, my husband and I have been married 24 years, and he's been unfaithful most of those years through behaviors rooted in him well before we met, porn, fantasizing, emotional affairs. We attended the EMSW last fall after his fullest disclosure to date. We continue to participate in Married for Life and have a much deeper level of communication, intimacy, and understanding of each other now. Though the road is very painful at times, we both believe that God is leading us to a new and amazing marriage. The road has especially been difficult for me lately. I'm finding that I'm more often feeling highly anxious, stomach in knots, sad, distressed, disoriented, unprotected, and hopeless. 4 months ago, my husband took a new job to end contact with his last emotional AP. Almost weekly since then, he's crossed boundaries he had to establish for safety. For instance, over the last 2 weeks, I discovered he had not installed accountability software on his work computer. He said he's talked too emotionally with a female coworker, and when I asked, he said that he hasn't always been telling his accountability partners when he's crossed a boundary. These were all triggers for me, as they were indicative of his behavior as he repeatedly betrayed me in the years prior to EMSW. I emotionally flooded at each revelation, and he corrected himself in these areas. This is a typical pattern for us. Sometimes we're able to work as a team to fight and battle, but oftentimes it's through arguments that we continually come to a common understanding and goal. This path is often confusing for both of us. He sees dramatic changes in himself, but I often don't sense that he respects the weight of the impacts on me when he regularly crosses boundaries he's put in place to stay safe. I told him that for me, it's like he's waving a revolver around with the safety off. I believe he understands more, but I need help knowing how to stay safe when I feel so, or stay sane when I feel so unprotected. I'm having trouble not being fearful and anxious. I'm so thankful that through scriptures, God does routinely rescue me from my tailspins. Rick, what does safety mean for us at this point? How do I gain a sense of safety so I can move forward in my own grieving and healing, avoid any sort of trauma and PTSD, and continue to support my husband's recovery? Just a reminder, as I begin this, at the beginning you said that you're starting to have a lot of almost physical issues as you go through this. And first off, I just hate that that's happening to you. One of the things that you've got to remember, though, you are almost at the one-year mark, and typically the physical issues begin to get worse at that point in time. And so things like being highly anxious, stomach in knots, sad, distressed, disordered, unprotected, and hopeless, oftentimes people experience those symptoms at the one-year anniversary. Now, that's not to say your husband hasn't exacerbated the situation by crossing the boundaries. Sometimes if there's a change in scenery, such as going to a new job, the boundaries that were in place previously, or at least, I guess that shift, let me say that differently, that shift in job creates an entirely new high-risk situation. We frequently think that going to a new place is going to make things safer, when in reality the actual shift is what creates the risk, because since we think things are going to be easier, we begin to tell ourselves, well, I can handle this, I just couldn't handle or just had to be careful in that other situation, but in this situation I'm okay. And what I found, if I've ever had that attitude, is that's the place when I begin to really struggle, because instead of kind of letting go, trusting God, making it a spiritual journey, out of pride, I think I've got it, and I begin to try to run it again, and that's when things begin to fail. And I go back into my own patterns of, or my old patterns of self-deception, deceiving. I'll begin to find myself slipping and kind of doing some old patterns, which is really frustrating. I'll do things like not even putting software on the computer because I feel like I can handle this situation because it's not as risky as the previous situation where the AP was. And again, the opposite is actually true. So one thing I would suggest for him with his group of guys that he meets with, to really work at being honest with them about what his situation is, to be checking in regularly, to be running his plan around to them. The other thing I would suggest is it needs to be his plan to keep you safe, not your plan to keep you or him safe. Because if it's your plan, then the probabilities of him doing it in the long run really decrease. But if it's his effort because he loves you and wants to keep you safe, he's far more likely to follow that plan. If you're arguing and having tension just about situations you're concerned about, I would suspect that means he's getting defensive. And it may potentially provide opportunities for you to do a different type of how you approach him. I know one thing that Stephanie does for me that's really good, if she senses me getting defensive, is she backs off and she says something like, "Whoa, hang on. I'm not sure I can talk with you about this without you getting defensive." And of course, when she tells me I'm not going to be able to do it without getting defensive, in all honesty, I'm just a sucker. I'm not about to get defensive if she tells me I am going to get defensive. And at times this issue comes up because we, or at least the arguments come up, because sometimes out of fear, one person, when they bring something up, kind of do what we call fast startup. And that's what sets off that negative pattern and makes it difficult for the couple to talk about what's going on. Not saying he's excused from being defensive by any means, but there may be ways you can bring things up to make the situation better. Another way to approach him, maybe to keep him from getting defensive when you do need to talk about things, would be to tell him his best argument before you ever bring up your point, such as, "I know right now you really are trying to take care of our family, and I do know you're trying to work your recovery, and that you put a great deal of effort into all of this and certainly worked at keeping me safe, and I can't tell you how much I appreciate that." At the same time, and then bring up your point, when you don't put software on the computer, it really does scare me to death. And talk more about how it impacts you, and hopefully he'll have enough empathy to begin to consider what he's doing to you and begin to take actions, I think maybe for a much better reason. He needs to keep himself safe, but he also does need to protect you. And those steps he takes for that reason, I think, would give you more reassurance. So my first suggestion is for him to look at what it's going to take, what he feels he needs to be doing ultimately to protect the relationship and to protect himself, and to set those boundaries and keep them in place, because apparently he's not ready to lower those boundaries yet simply because he's already failed. And also to work on how you bring things up in terms of trying to keep things from going the wrong direction. And finally, the rest of it's just his ability to really get more and more honest with the guys he meets with. And if that's not a group he can be honest with, I'd suggest he finds another group to meet with. Last but not least, there's a book that you might find useful as you go through this, and it's a book called Crucial Conversations. I really like it just because it gives a way of bringing up difficult topics and trying to keep things from blowing up. The first author on this is Carrie, K-E-R-R-Y, Patterson. And that really is a good book on how to keep things on track as you and your mate talk. Another one that they've written too is called Crucial Accountability. I think you'd find the Crucial Accountability one to be more tempting to read first than Crucial Conversations. But I think if you read Crucial Conversations, you won't need the other. So don't start with Crucial Accountability, because that's really more about holding employees accountable. And I don't know that it would serve as good a purpose for you. So that is all of our questions for the day. I want to thank everybody for calling in, and keep those questions coming. I look forward to talking to you guys again next week. To healing.